Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 375.
Okay, y'all, starting out, I've got news. So if you're in the Patreon, you know that I had a sleep test done. And like for a CPAP. I'm going to be a Pappers, okay? But Carrie was guessing how many times.
Your results are in?
Yeah, my results are in. Like they said it was going to be 7 to 10 days. And then I got a little da-doop, da-doop, your test results. And I said, they ain't got to call me. I want to know. And so I have it. And Carrie had guessed 26 times per hour that I like stopped breathing.
Okay.
Are you?
It was 85, wasn't it?
Okay. And so if you don't know, it's like 5 times an hour is like.
Minimum.
Yeah. So what is it? Is it 26? Are you holding strong
on
26?
I'm holding strong on 26.
Okay. I feel like it's Price is Right. Are you holding strong?
Yeah.
You're going to
do
it. 16 times an hour.
That is way better than I thought.
What was yours?
Girl, I don't know.
Did it not come in a thing?
Ma'am, do you know how long I've had this CPAP?
Well, a long time.
Well, let me look.
It says that I have obstructive sleep apnea.
Duh.
Moderate.
Duh. I really thought you were going to be severe.
Uh-huh. I say, y'all really out here thinking I'm terrible.
Look, no.
Mine
you
is
are.
More snoring than the breathing, I think. Like, my thing that's like, whoo. But I was like, 16 times an hour? That is not, I mean, it's bad. We said 5 is like the norm. Mine's 16. And I don't know how much this CPAP is going to be, but it sounds very expensive.
Well, but once you've paid for it.
I've paid a lot of money for them to tell me I can't sleep right. So, yeah.
Guess how many mine was.
Okay. I'm going to say 22.
13.4.
Fuck. Hate that you can breathe better than me at night.
We're not competitive at all.
What was Colby's?
Colby's probably was 86. They're like, that's not even breathing. I'm like, yeah, I know. I slept next to him.
Damn it, I was really proud of my 16 because you thought it was so bad.
I really thought it was going to be worse.
Me too, honestly.
My damn sister was 25. Are you a zombie? How are you even functioning?
Right?
Also, y'all, I just heard my mic make a noise. We have news. One, we finally got a new computer. So the people who are going to thank us most are, one, Caden, who edits his podcast, because we would have to send it to him in multiple parts because it would screw up. And two, anyone on Patreon that joins the Emma the Asshole Live, because sometimes I'd have to do it on my phone because the computer wouldn't work. But we also have a new mic stand coming for me, so I won't do like the trucker. Like, you know how they have like the headphones with the mic?
Yeah.
Because every time I move, the cord like makes like a little pop. And I don't know if y'all can hear it, but we can hear it when we're like listening back to it. So if you hear that and you hate that, it's going to stop, I promise.
Oh, Lord, I cannot wait. Now, there's going to be some other getting used to because Carrie loves to fucking move.
I do. I love to move and I love to lean back, which is why we're getting the mic stand that we're getting, because it's like got like a long arm so I can like bring it close to me and not have to sit up straight. Like Donna is sitting up straight as an arrow right now without her back even touching the chair to talk on her mic. I don't know how she does it.
I don't know. And not to plug Patreon again, but really, you should join. Last night, we did do Am I the Asshole? It was a whole technical difficulties when we thought we had it good.
I was so excited about this damn Am I the Asshole? Because I was like, first one with a new computer, I'm going to be ready. Nobody's going to be waiting on me because my shit is tight.
Well, we know that. But she was. I fell asleep. She had to wake me up from the security camera again. And people on Patreon got to see her wake me up.
Mm-hmm.
I shared the clip. So I'm just saying, if you want to see the actual shit show, you got to be on Patreon.
The only thing I would change about that video is you can't hear me yelling at you.
I know. All you can hear is like the because you're coming from the thing.
But you sure can see Birdie being like, the fuck is that noise?
Yeah, my dog is like, she's just laying there on the couch beside me. And then she's like,
and then you can,
wait, what?
You can literally see in the video that she has sleep apnea. Let me just say that.
Yes, but not as bad as you thought.
Well, speaking of Patreon, Patreoners, thank you so much. Kimberly P. from We Don't Know Where, send us your address.
Cassie B. from West Virginia.
And Alexis C. from Texas. So if you want to be able to see the video and get an extra episode a week, including a Facebook Live, which right now we're doing the Am I the Asshole, head on over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast.
Also, if you hear, Carrie stopped up.
You know what? We weren't going to mention that.
Knock on wood, after the CPAPers gets here, I will not have to spend money for a little bit because I might be sleeping good, but my pocket is light.
Well, to be fair, you're not going to be sleeping that great at first. It's going to take some time.
Yeah. But you know what really lulls me to sleep is when I'm on a freaking cruise ship and it's just rocking a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best sleep ever. And we are going on a cruise. Did we tell you that? I think we did. It's called Crime Wave at Sea. It's November 3rd through the 7th. We're leaving from Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Heck yeah. And it is on a Royal Caribbean cruise line, which is going to be so much fun. I've never been on one and I cannot wait.
Me too. Also, I cannot wait because we're going to fangirl out ourselves because Sinisterhood's there, Scared to Death, Last Podcast on the Left, Housewives of True Crime, like so many people.
Yeah, and you're also going to get not only like us and a True Crime cruise, you also get a cruise where we're going to stop in the Bahamas and Royal Caribbean's private island. Ooh, that makes me feel very fancy.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be fan meetups and exclusive activities designed to connect all the true crime fans. But you know how you get to go? You got to go to crimewaveatsea.com/creep. You can put your information in and you're going to get a fan code to help you get your spot, get your room, book. We want you there.
Yes. But hey, if sea is not your thing, we also have a trip coming up that's all land.
And it is in the spooky dookie city right now.
New Orleans.
Mm. Exactly. Annabelle left and made her mark, and here we come right behind her.
Mm-hmm. And now that is going to be sooner than the cruise. This is July 25th through the 27th.
And if you want to get in on that, head to one of our, well, anything on social media, because it's been posted everywhere. The little like infographic about it that has hotel information and everything that you need.
Yeah. And we have a group rate going. It's going to be a live show. We're going to do the Museum of Death. We're going to play some games. You know, we're going to have fun. And you know what? I'm probably going to be on some gummies.
Same, because it's going to be too damn hot to be drinking.
Oh, Lord.
So we want to see y'all. Come as you will. What are the words?
Oh my God. Come as you are?
Yeah. I almost said as you were. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. It's as you are. And then I panicked. And then I was like, don't fuck it up.
I think it does say as you were at some point.
Okay. See, I was just ahead of the game.
You did Nirvana. And that triggered, if you're watching The Last of Us, there's a poster of Kurt Cobain on Ellie's door. Okay. And I was like, huh, is that Taylor Hansen flipping someone off? And then I was like, oh my God, that's Kurt Cobain, Donna, but he's younger, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that says so much about me that I'm like, is that Taylor Hansen? Not one of the people from Hansen, not whatever. Like, I knew.
Yeah.
The youngest. Oh my God.
Well, my brother-in-law's brother has a Nirvana shirt that has the Hansons on it. And it says, like, this is Nirvana.
What?
I think, I'm pretty sure. So are you sure it wasn't that poster being funny?
No, I'm pretty sure. I think it's like an iconic thing where he's flipping it off. And he's got his long hair. He's younger.
Okay, I just messaged him and asked him. So if he messages me back anytime soon, I'll let y'all know.
That cracks me up, though, that that's a thing. Because, yeah.
So after work today, I had to go pick Colby up because he had to take his dad home from a thing. Okay, on the way home, because I have one of those little face shavers in my car that I keep there, you know?
That does not work well for me.
Well, it works like probably half the time. But out of habit, we're going down the road and I just grab it and I started doing my you know, mustache. And he said, well, we're just going to shave our goddamn face right now? What are we doing? I died because I was just like out of habit, like, you know?
Yeah. Well, and two, you normally don't. Like, take your car.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. I cracked up at that, though.
All right, y'all. Picture it. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 1894. We are going to talk about Shaker's Cigar Bar. Cigarette. Okay, anyway. me going. Okay, I'm over myself. All right. So constructed in 1894 in the heart of the historic Walker's Point neighborhood, the building originally served as a cooperage for the Schlitz Brewing Company. So what that was is that it was a place where you could get the barrels for the beer storage and transport. Because when it came to beer back then, Schlitz was king. Though I had never heard of that.
There's a water park called Schlitterbahn, and that's what I thought of.
Oh.
But clearly, I don't think that's the same.
But, you know, maybe people do say, like, oh, we're going to get Schlitz. No, blitzed.
Yeah, close.
I don't know. Anyway, I never heard of it, but I was like, oh, okay, cool. So they did that for a while, but by 1905, it transitioned into a coal and oil distribution center. And that was during the industrial boom in Milwaukee. Now, today, Shaker's Cigar Bar proudly touts that it is America's most haunted cigar bar. And I'm like, that's a niche thing, okay? But the thing is, it's not just a saying, it's reality. This place is crawling with history, mystery, and some booze with the Z-E and the O-O-S. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
We're here for the booze, but the actual booze, not the spooky dooky booze.
Yeah, we're here for the booze, but we'll stay for the booze.
Really, we just boo-hooing. Perimenopause over here.
Oh my gosh. I've been so emotional, y'all. So, okay, we're going to roll back the history, you know, roll like a cigar. Anyway, we're going to start with the land itself. Because before it was, you know, a brick and mortar business, the ground had a sacred past. And like many of my stories, guess what it was? An indigenous burial ground. But fast forward to the 1920s and 30s, when America was, you know, deep in prohibition, you couldn't legally buy
prohibition. I would say prohibition.
I had to put the
you had to put the emphasis on the hoe because you a hoe.
Okay, so sorry. When prohibition, how do you say it?
Prohibition.
Anyway, you couldn't legally buy alcohol, but if you had the right hookup, knew the right people, knew the right knock, you could get a drink in like a speakeasy, something kind of sleazy. You know what I mean?
Much like you.
You're not wrong. So enter some sleazy people, the Capone brothers. And yes, I'm talking about those Capones. Al, Frank, and Ralph are said to have had ownership of this very building. So what they did was like knock, knock, knock on the building and were like, this would be a good place for us to have a little speakeasy, do our little gambling, do all of the things, you know, money laundering, whatever else, allegedly, that they did. And the owners were like, I don't think so. And they're like, did you hear us? Because we're taking it.
Yeah.
And so they did, and they transformed it into a speakeasy. But on top, like if you just looked at it, you thought it was a soda bottling plant. And the name of the place was ABC Soda Company. They really thought hard about that.
I mean, they were like, what is a name that everyone's going to believe? No. We shouldn't do that. Let's name it something incredibly generic that nobody's going to believe.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. But again, underneath that facade, it was a speakeasy. But then above it, it was a brothel.
Tried to hit the trifecta there.
They did. So the top two floors of Shakers, where it is now, had become a brothel. And it was like two floors. The first floor was for the fluffers. And that's basically women who had to entertain whoever. They didn't have a choice. So like the people coming off from sea, like the seamen, they had to entertain them and collect their semen. You know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure you made semen jokes in the last one, episode two.
Uh-huh. Because that was the Sailor Snug Harbor.
And you're a thirsty bitch.
Yes. They were just kind of like the run-of-the-mill brothel peeps, okay? Not to downplay them, but like, here's why I'm saying like the run-of-the-mill, like they were the people who worked in the brothel. The second floor was called the A floor. And that's where one woman ran that floor. And she got to choose who she wanted to be with.
Okay.
So the fluffers were just like to get them ready, you know, like they had to deal with like the rough and tough and all the things crowd. But the A girl, she got to have the whole suite to herself. Mm-hmm. And she was like the prize. Like people might have gotten like, quote unquote, stuck with the fluffers, but they were always wanting to get that A girl. Like, they wanted the golden ticket to the golden pussy. Now, of course, most of these women did not have another choice. You know, they were forced to do this. Some of them were victims of violence. Some were victims of suicide. And then others just had heartbreaking stories, you know? The brothel was said to have operated until 1945. And some of those girls may have never truly left. So we're going to go into one ghost in particular, and that's Molly. Now, she was the top girl in the brothel, you know, the A girl, and she was just 18 years old. Now, according to Shaker's tour guides and the owner, Bob Weiss, Molly has, you know, been seen and heard all throughout the halls of the third floor. Who Molly Brennan is, like I said, 18 years old, and she had been there for a little bit as the top girl, and then she received an unexpected visit from a man named Patrick. It kind of goes like two different ways, that Patrick came first, but also his dad. But he wasn't just any client. He was a friend from back home that kind of had a past with her, you know, like, they weren't in a relationship ever, I don't think. It was more of he wanted to be, she wanted to be, but it never happened. And now she's living this life where, yes, she's in a brothel, but she's like the top girl and she doesn't want to leave, supposedly. That's what they said. Who knows? Because, again, the Capones are, you know, the head honchos, all the things. But Patrick came in there, which one, I'm like, you're going to a brothel, dude.
Right.
Like, so it's not like you were like, my long lost love. There's like this serendipitous moment, like at a cafe or something, like you're in a brothel.
Yes. But, okay. I've never understood on like movies or even just stories that we cover where it'll be like, these men will meet someone that's a dancer and then get so pissed later that they're a dancer. And I'm like, you literally knew what they did when y'all got together.
Right.
Like, now it's a problem for you, but she's done this or he's done this the whole time. Mm-hmm. And you just all of a sudden now have a problem with it.
Yep. Now, some say that when he asked her to run away with him and leave this life behind, she was like, I don't know. But you know what? Yes. Like, there's a future with you, and I don't know my future here. But the Capones were like, do you really want to go? Because, you know, they weren't giving you a severance package kind of thing.
Right. And, I mean, let's be honest. What type of work is a woman in that year going to do and make that kind of money and have that level of control if she's a top girl?
Right. That's what I was going to say. Like, she got, like, the fine clothes, you know, she had the power, she had all of that. Oh, and going up to the brothel, there's a gate. It looks like prison bars, but it's a gate. And that was, if you don't pay after your thing and you try to leave, you weren't leaving. If you don't pay, you don't leave. So they would just like shut it and be like, you know, do the things that they would do. Some people say that Patrick, you know, gave up that night and then he came back. But he came back and he saw something that no one ever wants to see. The love of his life, supposedly, in bed with his father. But another thing said that his father was like her sponsor, because to get to the top girl, you kind of had to have a sponsor. Kind of like you have to know someone to pay people to give you this spot and then you have to earn your keep.
Yeah.
And he was her sponsor, so she wouldn't have to just do anyone. She could kind of choose. But being her sponsor, he had first dibs on her. So, like, whenever he wanted to, like, if she was in with another client and he came knocking on the door, she had to stop what she was doing and service him. He wasn't doing it out of the kindness of his heart. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's why I don't believe he found her in bed with his father, because what happens next, his father's not mentioned. So I really think, like, he might have found out from his dad or something. I don't know. Or she told him or, like, something. But because it was the brothel upstairs, you had to have guards there. I mean, to protect the women, because they are, quote unquote, you know, your property and assets, which is gross. But also, if someone doesn't pay, you got to, like, make them pay. And there is a bouncer named Sam who was working security that night. Now, later, all three, Molly, Patrick, and Sam, were supposedly found dead. What seems to have played out is that Patrick got really mad, and in a rage, he murdered Molly by strangling her, and then he had to dispose of her body, and so he burnt her body in the fireplace and, like, went to chop her up to get rid
Holy
of her. Okay?
Shit.
But other people say that Patrick then turned and, like, blamed Sam for letting his father come up there and do all the things. And so they struggled. Sam was killed. Then Patrick died by suicide. But we really don't know what happened in that those final moments. Now, later, the owner, Bob, he had some stuff that he's like a jack of all trades, okay, and master of them all. But he was like a cook. He had a catering thing. And there was like this little shack out in the back of the building. And he's like, you know what? Let's tear that down. We're going to get it where I can do my other things. I can host out here, all this stuff. And so they break ground in there. And then, like, you know, kind of how Carrie's bathroom remodeling goes. Like, you start one thing and then it's like, oh, fuck. Well, let's do this. And then this has to be replaced and, you know, all the things. So they ended up, like, taking it down to the bare bones. And they found some bare bones.
Uh-oh.
And it was found inside the wall during that renovation. And the medical examiner dated them back about 70 years old. And they said that they believe those remains are Molly. Now, like I said, Molly is still said to roam upstairs, you know, sometimes appearing near the staircase, other times just kind of standing silently in the hallway. People have heard her whisper They've heard giggles. They've felt her brush past them while they're in like an empty room. And the third floor is really closed off to the public except during their ghost tours that they have. And even then, some of the guides say that they feel uneasy up there. So I watched the show on YouTube and it was called The Paranormal Files. And they went there and talked to Bob, the owner, and did their own little like investigation. And there's like four people, I guess. I don't know. I've never really watched them before, but they broke off and it was like the two main people were given the tour by Bob and he was going over everything. And then they were going to stay there because you could rent out the penthouse as like an Airbnb and stay there. They're going to do their investigation, all the things. So while they were being talked to by the tour guides and Bob, two other people in their team were in the brothel just kind of doing, like, it was during the afternoon, like just doing some EVP work, doing some stuff with the Oculus. And they got names that they didn't understand. It was like Dan, there was an Adam, and they're like, what the fuck? This is so random, you know? But then they got burned, and the lady said that she could smell like burning, and it felt like she was being smothered and stuff. But they didn't know the history part of what was going on. And later, when they were like reviewing the stuff, they were like, wait, this is like exactly what they were saying happened. Like her body was burned, all of that. And the Dan and Adam, we don't know who they were, but many tour guides get those names from like EVPs and stuff.
Huh.
And so it was just like a random thing that they connected when they were, you know, talking to a tour guide, she had mentioned it. And then when they went back, these two people who's basically like me and Carrie, who's just like, oh, let's just go in here and do this thing real quick. Well, you know, like we're not supposed to, but we're going to do it. And then you get proof. But so they did that on the Paranormal Files. And then they also were talking to the tour guides. And one of them said that some of the ghosts have followed her home and they've like unlocked the door and like her apartment door. They followed her to her friend's house and like had messed with the lights there and stuff. And I said, oh, no.
Yeah, look, little ghosty ghost, we have to talk about boundaries.
Right.
And you can't be following me home.
No. Now, Molly isn't the only ghost there. Because, hello, it's the most haunted cigar bar in America. Down in the basement where the Capones had their secret meetings, you know, disposed of all the contraband, the people,
right,
the evidence. There's this deep well, like a cistern. I might be putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable there, too. But it's got like it's water and all the things. And, you know, they say like water is a conduit for energy and stuff. And it's so deep that you can't see the bottom. So if you wanted to hide something that could never be found, that would be a good thing. The only one who would find that is the girl from the ring that's climbing out of the well. Bob said that they have used ground penetrating radar and the results where two human remains were curled together in the concrete in this basement area. But the Milwaukee Police Department said that they were too old to be linked to any open cases that they had, so they didn't know. And they didn't have to be exhumed unless Bob wanted, and he declined. He was like, let's just let them be at rest there. And also, like, he would have to break the concrete, all the things, and who knows? Again, he already got it with the shack out back that he was like, yeah, we'll renovate it for a minute. And, you know, like $1 million later, probably.
Right.
Here we are. He's like, you know what? We'll let the skeletons be there.
Rest in peace.
Yes. So speaking of Bob, he bought the place in 1986 and he, you know, wanted to lean into the history behind it. So he preserved, you know, the dark wood. The lighting's low, and he embraces that eerie atmosphere. Now, Bob said that people do rent out the penthouse, like I said, Airbnb, but only 10% of the people actually manage to stay there the whole night.
Sidebar, every time you say Bob, I immediately think of Bob's Bizarre Bazaar.
Oh, I do love Bob's Bizarre Bazaar. hate him, love his name. I mean, the Capones could have had Bob's Bizarre Bazaar as a name. Like, that's the kind of name you need.
They didn't know what they had.
Uh-uh. But shoes will end up in the sink in the penthouse. People have woken up outside and didn't know how they got there. And a lot of people have heaviness in their chest and they feel very anxious and everything. So I'm like, I don't need to go to the penthouse to feel any of that.
Right. I'm perfectly content providing myself with my own anxious behaviors.
Exactly. Oh, and back in the cellar, like in on the bottom floor, they have this safe that's there from like the Capone era. Now, I don't know if this is going to be like the Dybbuk box or something, but Bob said they cannot open it. Like, they have had people like on the police department, people who said like, oh, I can crack any safe, I can do all the things. And like, you know, they do all the stuff, but they can't get it open without fucking it up. Like, And some psychics have said like, no, there's something super valuable in there, but like, also we don't know how to open it. And again, they would have to disrupt the integrity of the safe. Like, it would no longer be what it is if they open it. And he's like, it's kind of a gamble he's not willing to take right now. But the safe moves around. And so you can kind of see it where it's like shifted on the floor. And he said between ghost tours, he has noticed that, you know, it was over here and then it kind of turned a little bit and turned a little bit. So I don't know what it is, but I want to know what's up in there.
For real.
You know me, I'm a purger. I would have been like, look, I got to know what's in there. Let's just get rid of the safe, what all the things. But people down there really feel like the heaviness on their chest again. They feel like they're getting sucked down in the ground. And again, this is probably where all like the nefarious things happened. You know, upstairs was a speakeasy and then upstairs was a brothel and stuff. But this was like the covert shit. Like, if you didn't pay at the brothel, you went down there to the well. People have had shortness of breath. Two women actually fainted and had to have the paramedics called because when they came to, they couldn't move their legs.
Damn.
And finally, like, they got feeling back in their legs. But I thought that was very interesting because, you know, they always say, like, the mob loves to break kneecaps and stuff. Just saying.
I mean, is that, like, movie mob or we think that's legit mob?
I honestly don't know, but I don't want to meet any mob.
I feel that.
Not even a flash mob, honestly.
I know. That's...
I mean, talk about anxiety, right? Again, I don't like not being in on the joke. Now, not everything is mob-related in Shakers. Because one of the most well-known spirits is Elizabeth. And she was a sweet, playful 8-year-old girl who died on the property before it was all the Capone stuff. And she was playing in an apple tree and stuff and fell and instantly died. Now, she's said to haunt the women's restroom, and she likes to have fun. So she'll have the faucets turning on and off, doors opening and closing on their own. They hear little voice giggling when no one else is around. And there's one stall door that seems to be her favorite, and it opens even when someone's inside. And worse than that, she has, supposedly, locked multiple people in their stalls.
No.
And they've had to, like, crawl under to get out. I would have been like, no. Well, this is where I'm staying.
This is where I die, because I am not, no.
No.
Can't do that.
I would have been like, can I give you some ghost candy? Can I do anything for you? Because I cannot fit underneath that. Now, a lot of the tour guides have, you know, had their run-ins with the spirits. Like I said, that one, the ghost has hitched a ride on her shoulder home and stuff. But a lot of them say that they're friendly here, you know, other than, you know, not knowing what's in the well and being locked in the bathroom. But even that's not like a threatening thing. It's just threatening to me because of my size. And
the floor's dirty.
And the floor is dirty.
Yeah, more so that than the size. The floor's dirty. I don't want to get on it.
I would if I could just easily slide underneath it, but I don't know. Some of those are too low. What am I going to do? It's not the cartoon where, you know, you can fit through the crack and then, like, you just, like, balloon back up. No, no, no. Oh, and if you love shows, I would say watch the Paranormal Files on YouTube. But also, Bob said that they were on episode 3 of Dark Tourist on Netflix. Now, they weren't featured on this episode. You know, like, he said featured, but it wasn't about them. It was about Milwaukee in general and, like, places where Jeffrey Dahmer had been and stuff. Because, you know, he used to troll the bars and all of the things. And so that is on the episode, but not, like, the whole episode's about their bar. But I remember watching Dark Tourist. It's, like, 8 episodes. One season, and it was very fascinating because he went everywhere. But if you do go to Milwaukee, let us know if you go to Shaker's Haunted Cigar Bar, and let us know if you get any type of spirits, the drinking kind or the boo kind.
Do you like cigars?
No. I mean, I've never had one.
But do you like the smell of them?
No, I don't think I've ever liked the smell of anything that, yeah, like, you burn. Like, incense, not a fan of it. Cigarettes, no. I guess I haven't been around cigars. What about you?
Okay, whenever I quit smoking, I was like, I'll just smoke cigars. Like, when I'm, out with people, you know? But, no, I don't really like the smell. But some people love it.
Well, I feel like you don't, really, smoke them. Like, it's like a thing. Like, yeah, it's more of I don't know. I just feel like it would get wet with my mouth, and that's gross.
Okay, that's weird. No, I don't think it does that.
I don't know. What did Will Smith say?
Get my wife's name out your fucking mouth?
No, not that. It's for the look, I don't light it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, and Bill Clinton didn't inhale.
But you know, Morgan, our moderator, her and her husband will go to cigar bars, and it does look fancy and stuff, but I've never been, I guess, in that atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, and you've never been, a smoker of anything.
No, it gets heavy on my fucking chest just being whew.
In the casino.
Yes. Do you know how annoying I would be if I went to this bar? Because I really would be can I have some type of spirit? And then be and you know what I mean? Always doing the things. Yeah. Speaking of the worst, this has nothing to do with the story. I was at Sonic the other day and the speaker thing was working, but then it wasn't working then, right? They came on, I was talking, and then this guy pops up right there and it's can I help you? Go ahead with your order. Which I really, that's one thing about that Chick-fil-A, I'm I need to be able to see the menu and look at it and do it without you looking at me because my order is large. Okay. But I was oh my God, he looks like Matt Rife, the comedian. And I was don't say it, Donna. Don't say it, Donna. Don't say it, Donna. Because you know, he hears it all the time. What did I do?
Told him.
I said, has anyone ever told you? He said, Matt Rife. And I said, yeah. Okay. Bye.
Wow.
I am the worst.
You literally are. You're literally the person that people are yeah, that's the first time I've heard that joke.
Literally.
And you think you're fucking hilarious.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So I have been going back and listening to the I Think Not podcast because I got way behind all the things. And they were doing a show called True Nightmares. And on the show, they do 3 stories in one, and this was one of the stories, and I was I have to fucking do this story. So this one is way more macabre than what
you normally
used to. Yeah.
Oh, you're stepping a toe into my pond?
I wouldn't call this your pond. I would call this pond adjacent.
Okay.
I would call this the bank of your pond.
Okay.
In low tide.
Oh my God.
No water to be found. Okay, so this is the story of Anatoly Moskvin. So he was born in Russia in September of 1966 in Nizhny Novgorod. I think I said it right. But growing up, he was like really socially awkward, super smart, like genius level smart, I feel like. But when he was around like third grade, so like 8 or 9 years old, he started to change. And even though he was socially awkward before, his demeanor that was more like calm, quiet, became more aggressive, and he started having outbursts. Now, later we learn that this is actually because allegedly he was sexually assaulted by this man that we never find out who it is. But he said it happened, so we're going to believe him. Now, his parents were like, what's going on? Why all of a sudden this change in his behavior?
Right.
But they really didn't push, and they just kind of were like, okay, we'll leave him alone to kind of do his own thing. And if he wants to, you know, kind of isolate himself, so be it. Now, growing up, allegedly, his parents would take him for walks, but their walks were always in graveyards, which people feel like led to some of his kind of odd behavior. Now, like I said, socially awkward for the 805th time. Drink every time I say socially awkward. This, of course, led to him being bullied in school. And with being, one more time, socially awkward, and now being bullied on top of the alleged sexual assault, he's really started becoming more reclusive and, you know, withdrawn into himself. When he had a little bit of money, he always spent it on books and literally taught himself multiple languages.
God, I wish I could do that.
I just wish I was smart like that.
Me too.
You either have an ear for languages or you don't, and I don't.
I don't have a tongue for languages.
Feel that. It gets very heavy when I try to roll it. Unless I'm given a rooter tutor.
Oh, Lord.
But on March 4th, 1979, this is the point that really turned Anatoly's world upside down. So he was walking and he saw a group of men in black suits. Not Donna's men in black. I see her wanting to lean up and really think that I'm dipping my toe in her pond, but I'm
no,
not.
No, I was going to say, was he walking in a cemetery?
No.
Okay.
But these men, okay, now this is all alleged, y'all. But these men were on their way to a funeral for a kid who I think's name was Natasha Petrova. But that could have been just like a placeholder name, you know, because sometimes if it's like a kid, it really doesn't matter to the story. I mean, she matters to the story, but not in like the way of...
Not to have her name associated with...
Correct.
Anatoly.
Correct. Okay. So the men tell Anatoly that they're going to Natasha's funeral. And they say that Natasha is a young girl and that she was getting out of the bathtub and essentially slipped on an electric cord and electrocuted herself. And they're like, hey, we're going to the funeral. Come with us. And he's like, what?
Okay.
And so they basically force him to come to the funeral. Now, at this time, he would have been about 13 years old. So when he gets to the funeral, the men are like, okay, now go kiss her. Like,
what?
The body. And he's like, well, I don't want to do that. And then Natasha's mom walks up. So I feel like he like thinks that, okay, now her mom's here. Like, this is, they're going to like essentially let me go at this point. And he said that like everybody around him was praying in a different language that he didn't know. And Natasha's mother gave him an apple and was like, I will give you some candy if you'll kiss her. And he's like, I don't want to.
Well, an apple is not candy.
Well, but an apple and candy.
Oh, okay.
A very balanced meal. And so they ended up forcing him to kiss Natasha's forehead 3 times.
Okay.
And after that happened, Natasha's parents put a wedding ring on him and on Natasha.
What?
And then he was given his apple and said, don't tell anybody for at least 40 days.
What?
So I think that if this story is true, I think it's supposed to lend its way into how he became more into the macabre, death and dying, black magic, the occult type thing.
Is he a necrophiliac?
Wait.
Okay.
Now again, Anatoly tells this story, so we don't know that this actually happened.
Right. He's not a reliable narrator.
So he goes on to graduate from school, like what's it called, high school-ish, and goes to university and actually ends up making a name for himself in academic circles. He spoke 13 different languages.
Did he ever figure out the language that they were speaking?
That I don't know. But he also taught at the university level. He focused on Celtic history, folklore, the occult, and like I said, death and dying. And I mean, if all the stories that we've heard are true, like, of course that spurred that fascination in him. It said that he had over 60,000 books and documents in his collection.
Holy shit.
And he was involved in many publications, like himself, but I mean, that's not uncommon for professors to be, you know, published authors. But his collections didn't stop at books because he became an expert in cemeteries.
Oh, Lord.
So for some reason, in 2005, he was charged or like told to essentially create a list of people in cemeteries in the area. And because he was like a little bit of an expert, like this was right up his alley. Now, let me tell y'all that some of the numbers varied on this.
So like he did a census?
Essentially, yes.
Okay.
There was only one article on Medium.com that had like a very low number. Every other article said that his listing was of over 700 cemeteries.
Holy fuck.
Now, the low ball number said that it was like 40 cemeteries, 700 corpses is what it said. But like every other thing said that he got up to like 752, I think, cemeteries that he walked through and literally cataloged every single person.
Oh, sheesh.
And I'm like, that's a lot of walking.
A lot. And you know, cemeteries around here, they're not all paved and stuff.
No, I mean, especially if you're going to like rural cemeteries, family plots that they wouldn't have record of necessarily of who was buried where, which is, I guess, why they were doing this. And I want to say I saw that he said basically he would walk like 20 miles a day or something.
Oh, Lord.
Absurd.
No, thank you. Not even at Disney World.
Literally was going to say that's more than at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And he would walk around the cemeteries taking very detailed notes. But not only that, he would literally sleep at these cemeteries. He would drink water like from, if there was like a little running creek at the cemetery, that's what he would drink water from. He would sleep on haystacks. He even one time spent the night in a coffin that was being prepared for a funeral.
What in the actual fuck? Now, you said this is 2005?
Yes.
Who has hay out like that?
Well, I think we're in a very, like, some of these places were pretty rural.
Okay. Because I'm just thinking he's taking someone's bench or something.
Well, if they're anything like the damn cemetery my dad's in, they will not let you have a bench because we bought one for the end of his thing. And Colby and I got one for my mom and everybody fucking had benches out. But apparently they let them all pile up and then they like take a day and they take them all out.
So stupid.
Because they say it's hard to mow around them. Now, police would question him sometimes because there were occurrences where sometimes graves had been like vandalized and then you have this guy like walking around. And so they were like, what are you doing here? You know,
yeah, what in the Michael Jackson Thriller is going on?
Exactly. We hate him, but that's another one of those people. I cannot separate the art from the artist. Anyway, but as the police would question him, he would just like flash his thing and say, hey, I'm from the university. I'm doing research. And they'd be like, oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. On you go.
They're probably like, that smart weirdo, you know?
Well, and then this part was more on the Nightmare Show and then this documentary that I got a lot of stuff from that I'm going to tell you the name of it later because I don't want to tell the whole story by the name of it. There were graves that were being, like, things were being taken from them. And there was this one family that was really kind of, like, being fucked with. It was the grave of Olga Shardamova. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. So this poor baby, I'm not going to go much into her story. There's like whole podcasts on it, including like a case file and I mean, all kinds of stuff like this, her poor story. But Olga was a 10-year-old that had been murdered. She was begging her parents to let her walk to her grandmother's house by herself. And they finally let her go for the first time alone. And she took her bag and her umbrella. She went to her grandmother's house that was only a block away, but she never came back. And Olga was missing for over 5 months.
Oh my gosh.
Well, come to find out, everything describes it as a drug addict, like walked into the lobby where Olga was and robbed her of her earrings. But as she tried to escape, they hit her over the head with a metal bar and it killed her. So her body was there for like 5 months before anybody ever found her. Well, once they did find her, she was laid to rest in a cemetery, obviously. Her parents, Natalia and Igor, were really trying to like do some stuff to make her plot like really nice. And
I really feel like when it is a child who passes, the parents usually do like build it up and
yes, and like, go more often and yeah. That kind of thing. So her parents, now this was back in 2003, where they put like a metal fence around it and were trying to like paint it and all of that. And one time they came back and her mom was like, something's wrong. Something's off. Like something's not right. Something's been moved. Something's been touched. Like something's not right. And after that, they started getting letters left at the grave, but they were written out addressing Olga as like little lady. And like the letters were like written to her. And it was just like almost like taunting the parents, but it wasn't, because it would also like chronologically go with her age that she would be, because this went on for years. And so it would be like, you know, at the end of the school year, I hope you enjoyed your like sixth grade, blah, 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 you know, whatever.
Oh my gosh.
It was really bad. And so the family, of course, goes to police, but like there's nothing that really they can do because they have no evidence as to like what this is, you know?
Right.
And every new year, the grave would be decorated for New Year's, and like sometimes there would be toys left there that had been taken from other like grave sites. And then there was a letter saying that they needed to like make a bigger headstone for her, like threatening them. And so they did. And then there was damage to the headstone after that. And I'm like, first of all, do y'all know how much a fucking headstone costs? We're talking like 10 grand.
Yeah.
That shit is not cheap. So again, you can kind of see like the stuff that's happening around the graves that the police, like when they see Anatoly walking around, they're going to stop him and be like, what's going on? Who are you? Have you seen anything? And I think that they did actually even talk to him about Olga's gravesite and being like, what could this, because he's like a cemetery expert. Okay, so back to Anatoly's life. So he had not even a girlfriend, but a young woman that he was kind of in a platonic relationship with. This part about that platonic relationship was only in the documentary. Don't let me forget to tell you the name of it later.
So she was a friend girl?
Yeah, but like they had a relationship, but it was like, it wasn't a sexual relationship, but they both wanted kids. And so they were like, well, maybe we should just adopt together. But like they didn't live together. It was just kind of a weird, but that's the only place that said that there was a girl that he was wanting to adopt with. Other places said that he did try to adopt. And he started going through the process and all the adoption agencies were like, no, like he lived with his parents and he didn't make enough money to be able to adopt a kid. And so this was kind of hard on Anatoly because he did want to have a kid. Specifically, he really wanted a daughter.
Dang, he lived with his parents and he was a professor. How didn't he have enough money?
Professors don't make a ton of money.
But I'm saying he must have spent his like me.
On books, not like you.
True.
Okay, so flash forward in Moscow. In 2011, there was an attack on an airport. After this happened, there were some grave sites of Muslims that were being, like, painted over.
Vandalized.
Yes, absolutely. And so the police were like, okay, this is clearly in connection with this airport attack, all the things. And so they started investigating this. And nothing really says how one thing led to another, but bada bing, bada boom, this led police to Anatoly. They ended up arresting him for vandalizing these headstones. And so they were like, okay, well, let's go check out his apartment. Because he lived with his parents, but they were only there like a couple of months out of the year. Like, they would go away on holiday for like May through October. They were gone like essentially 6 months out of the year. Nothing really says how the vandalizing of the graves led them specifically to him to be like, he did this, like, we need to arrest him. But because he was arrested, they go to his apartment to search, to find proof, all the things, you know, I'm assuming they got a warrant, blah, 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 blah. When they get into his apartment, they could not believe what they found. They found 29 life-sized doll-like figures, like antique dolls. But they weren't dolls. They were female children that had been dug up from these cemeteries.
Oh my God.
Now, they did find a pair of shoes in the apartment that matched the footprints around some of these desecrated graves. And so they were able to be like, okay, like, you know, we have literal body proof, but we have some like forensic evidence too.
Mm-hmm.
So the police also found things that had been taken off the graves, like how I talked about, like the little knickknacks that people would leave and stuff. And Olga was one of those bodies
they found.
And it was him who was leaving those notes to the family.
Wow.
And her parents said something that, like, truly, I mean, just, like, struck me to my core. Because they said, well, one, they had her for, like, 9 years, and he had her for 10.
Oh, my gosh.
And then all of those years, they were going to visit her at her gravesite, and she wasn't there.
She wasn't there.
That broke my heart.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, literally, my sister texted me this morning and was like, do you sometimes need a break, like, from the true crime stuff? Cause she's like, she was kind of, I guess, at her max. And I was like, I've actually become pretty desensitized to it. And it's terrible to say. It takes a lot for me to be like, wow, that's really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And that got me. Just picturing them putting their heart and their soul into her graveside and being like tormented for years by these letters and things missing and, you know, but also coming and there being like New Year's decorations and end of year, like end of school year, beginning of school year, like all these things.
Yeah.
And having all this torture and still thinking that they're there visiting their daughter in spite of all that. And then to find out she wasn't there the whole time. Oh my God.
It's so weird that he would want to like taunt the parents.
Yeah, I really don't understand. That is an aspect of this story that, I mean, obviously it doesn't make sense, but that doesn't fit the mold of the rest of the story. But okay, so some of the bodies were still in the clothes in which they were buried.
Oh my gosh.
Some had like fabric over their faces and their hands, but basically they were essentially made into dolls almost to protect the body. But okay, this is pretty gruesome. Some of the bodies had music boxes inside of them, like
what?
Inside the rib cages, so that when he moved them, they would make noise.
Uh-uh. That's creepy as fuck.
Some of them had, like, their own personal objects inside of them. Like, one had, like, their hospital bracelet that had their name and, like, cause of death. One of them had part of, like, their gravestone that was inside of them.
What?
Now, his parents say that they had no idea that this was happening. Like I said, they were, like, off a lot on holiday, and they were, like, just thinking,
what did he do when they got back?
Right. Well, they thought, like, he just really liked dolls and had this obsession, and
it
was just, like,
stink?
Okay, yes, it did, because that's the thing, is that some neighbors said, like, it did stink in there, but we just thought, like, they're gross, kind of thing. Or, you know, like, it did stink in there, but who thinks that somebody has 29 bodies that they took from cemeteries? Like, that's not what you think, you know?
Right.
Okay, so.
Also, though, like, how did he take these bodies, but, like, they never saw him dig it up and stuff?
Because I thought the same thing. Okay, so what he would do is he wouldn't like dig up the whole coffin. He would dig at the top of it and like cut a hole in the coffin and then pull him out.
Oh my God.
After his arrest, his dad, well, and his mom actually both had to be hospitalized, but his dad had a heart attack. Like they like couldn't take it.
Yeah, this is weird and sad and gross.
So he had been collecting, I'm going to air quotes, dolls for over 10 years. And people saw them. Like, they had people that came over to their house and stuff.
The fuck?
But they thought that they were just dolls. They didn't know that it was actual human remains. Now, Anatoly felt like he was rescuing these children. He said that their parents discarded them and left them there.
What?
And he was bringing them home and saving them and keeping them warm. And that he felt like basically technology was going to eventually keep up where he could bring them back to life. And he's like, he knew it was illegal, but he's like, I can't stop myself because I'm protect. He felt like he was protecting these kids. And this was it really all kind of started around the time that he tried to adopt and couldn't. And like the first time that he went into one of the graves was after he and his parents had like gotten in an argument about adoption. But now I do want to say there was no evidence of any, like no sexual component with these dolls. He seems to have really taken care of them, as awful as it is and terrible for these families. And I mean, the whole situation's awful. But it seems like he did take care of them.
Well, besides putting shit in their bodies and stuff.
Well, and I think, okay, so sometimes, basically, when he would take a body too, he would have to take it through the process of mummifying it. So he would use, like, bags with salt and baking soda to try to, like, mummify them. And that essentially, he would dry the bodies out that way. And then he would stuff them with cloth and different fabrics to make them more full so they would, like, feel more alive. And then also so they wouldn't, like, cave in through decomposition. He would put clothes on them, wigs, and then he would put, like, stockings over their hands and face and then put makeup on it. And then he would put buttons in their eyes so that they could watch cartoons with him.
What?
So now he got...
Also, what cartoons did he watch? But
he got charged with desecration of graves and dead bodies, and he could have gotten 5 years in prison for this.
Only 5 years?
Now, the vandalism of the graves for the people who are Muslim was considered a hate crime, but for some reason, those charges were dropped. No idea why. When it came time for him to go to trial, they were like, I think he needs a psych eval. So they did the psych eval, and he was diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic, and they said that he was unfit to stand trial right now. So he was put in a psychiatric facility, and basically every so often this gets renewed, and if they deem that he's cured, which I'm like, you're not going to cure someone of having paranoid schizophrenia. Like, you may handle his symptoms and all with medication, but it's not just going to go away. Like, you're not going to cure him.
Right.
But in February of 2013, they had a hearing to extend it because it was supposed to be like renewed every year. So then they renewed it again in 14 and 15. And then they were like, okay, can we go to like further out monitoring this? Because like every year, this is getting excessive. Like, he's not clearly not fit. And so then in 2018, his doctors were like, he's not dangerous anymore. I think we should release him.
What?
And then they did another evaluation in February of 19 and were like, no, it is way too early for release. And so the hospital withdrew that petition.
I would have been like, oh, we're going to release him to go to a trial.
Well, and here's the thing, too, is that he says that, like, at one point he did say that if he was released, he would do it again because he felt like he was saving these young girls, you know, by digging them up. But apparently now he's got a girlfriend, and there's nothing that says what her name is or anything, but apparently she, like, came to his trial and lives in the same, like, town that he lived in, And he's like, I just want to be released so I can marry my girlfriend and work as a foreign language tutor.
No.
Yeah. And it's just the weirdest thing. So, okay. So I used two articles from Medium, the Daily Mail, and there was an article called The Postmortem Post. And then the documentary I was telling you about, it was only 35 minutes long, but it was called Dollmaker, the Anatoly Moskvin story. That was on, okay, everything said it was on Apple TV, but it was not. I could only find it on YouTube.
So this reminds me of that case you did.
Yes.
Okay.
Because it was also on All That's Interesting. And it was like, you know how there was also one called Naturally Wicked that I used a lot for it too. Anyway, okay. So on All That's Interesting, it was like, you know, at the bottom.
If you like this, yes, check out this.
And that one was on there.
Well, if these poor girls, if they look anything like that case that you did, oh, Lord.
Carl Tanzler.
Yes, that's his name.
It's so, like, the thing is, too, is that this happened, I mean, while 2005, when he started everything, was 20 years ago, it's still not long enough, because he was only 45, too, but it's recent enough that we have pictures of everything. So this is Olga, and that's her doll.
Oh my gosh. I think I've seen that in like a TikTok, like, you know what I mean? Like when it's like, can you believe these pictures are like hauntingly real?
Yes.
But holy fuck.
You can really see like his picture from when he was arrested. Like he really does look like he's mentally ill. Because as he's gotten help and he's, which I know the medication can make him gain weight, like, but he looks like he's in distress when he's been arrested and he looks more calm. You know how you can just tell when someone's been in like a spiral, mm-hmm. You know, he looks distressed and not even disheveled, but just like, maybe disheveled, but just like, I don't know. I can't explain it.
Shit, it's just so weird that these are in color.
Versus that, you know, like he's just, and again, I know the medication and all makes you gain weight, but when you think of someone in like a psychotic break where they may not be eating as much, they're
right.
staying awake, they're doing all the things, you know, that's what he looks like.
Yeah.
But he would like put things over their hands and feet to like protect them, to keep them from like their bodies being injured.
Oh my gosh, that is, ugh. Those pictures remind me of these little mummy dolls that I got from my dad when he went to Egypt. And they were in like these little boxes. Their hands and their face looked like that, where it just was, oh gosh. Because it was like nondescript kind of.
Yes.
Like,
Well, and it's interesting that you said that because I can't even remember where I saw it. It was like this one random thing that said like he had this book from Egypt that talked about like mummifying and all of that. But all of the dolls, you're right, they have like a pretty, most of them I would say have like a nondescript face, and he would put wigs and clothes on them that he would get from wherever, and but he would put like even wax over their face and then paint makeup on it. Ugh. Like use whatever he had. It is just, I just think, you know, it's,
they've already lost their kid, and right. then that.
With a story like this, it's easy to get caught up in the sensational, like, 29 bodies made into dolls. He's the human doll maker, blah, 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 blah. But then when you really dial it back to the families that were going to their children's graves and thinking that they were having a connection with them and, you know, talking to them and telling them how much they loved them and missing them and all of that. And then to find out this happened. And then especially too with Olga, like how heartbreaking her murder was. And I think her mother even said, like, this is the child that you let rest in peace.
Yes.
This is not the child that you rob from their grave.
Right. Well, and then taunt. That's what I don't understand.
And
like, I don't get that.
Yeah, that doesn't fit the mold of he was trying to, he felt like they were going to come back to life. He was trying to protect them because they had been left out in the cold and he was keeping them warm and all this. and how delicate he was with their bodies to not, I mean, think about just even like putting shoes on them and stuff like that, just how delicate their bodies mm-hmm. would have been. It seems like he really did take care of them in that way. So that with that family doesn't match that.
No.
And it seems like she was one of the first ones he took. And so maybe it was just different because she was one. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm sorry. Him putting a music box inside them, that is next level. Like, there needs to be a fucking scary movie of that because that will haunt my nightmares.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic.
Like, that
but
is
also sad if you think about, like, it seems like he was really fucking lonely. And see, this is where I have a hard time too, is because sometimes I feel sorry for people, you know, like we've talked about that, how it's like we'll be watching To Catch a Predator, and when they get caught, like I for a moment feel sorry for them. But I think it's more because I feel sorry for their lives, like their family, their wife and kid that's home that thinks that they're mm-hmm. like out with friends or something, and then they're getting, you know. So thinking about him, I think about how lonely he must have been that he put that in there to have some sort of interaction with them, have some sort of noise made to give it, to bring them to life, you know?
Yeah.
But also, that's fucking terrible, and it doesn't matter how lonely he is. He took these children from their parents.
Yeah, he could have just made dolls.
Right. No. I completely agree. I understand that my logic is flawed and that I'm trying to give compassion where it's a mental illness, so I think some compassions do, but also ultimately the families of the babies that he took, those are the victims here.
Yes.
And so I think it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah. How come every time you go last, you do like the heaviest shit?
Well, this was not the same. It did have one murder in it.
It did, but like this was just one of those different heaviness. Like it leaves you like disturbed.
I know. This one was pretty rough. And like that nightmare show, like it talked about it. It was just because it's three stories in one show. So it was just like this quick, like, there's so much more to it, you know?
Yeah. Whew. Well, let us know what y'all think.
And by the way, I heard back and his Nirvana shirt did have Hanson on it.
Oh, God. If you didn't go through that whole long tangent in the beginning.
Yeah. I know. If the people who skip forward and just go straight to the stories are like, what the fuck is she talking about? Well, thank y'all so much for listening. I know we talked about Patreon a lot and we talked about all of our trips, and we know that that's a lot of financial responsibility that not everybody can do right now in this economy. But one thing that every single person can do is like, subscribe, and review, because those reviews on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify really do help us in the algorithm that brings more people so that we can bring more content to y'all and keep this ship running. So, don't forget, as I always say, like, subscribe, review, all the things, and remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.